The toll in Reno reaches 11. NTSB says records it needs to solve cases are being discarded. And after 4 months, F-22s will finally be back in the air. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, September 22, 2011. The number of fatalities from last weekend's disaster at the Reno Air Races now stands at 11, including pilot Jimmy Leeward. The city of Reno plans to hold a memorial service Sunday, which will be open to the public starting at 6 p.m. local time. Local clergy will conduct the service, and it will include the dedication of a tree in the Idlewild Park Arboretum in Reno. NTSB investigators continue to collect what they describe as tremendous amounts of material, including photos and videos captured by spectators at the event. There is a discussion beginning about the long-term viability of the National Championship Air Races, and it's starting on the topic of liability insurance. And, as feared, the media frenzy is sucking ordinary air shows, which have still not had a spectator fatality in the last 52 years, into this vortex. International Council of Air Shows President John Cudahy tells the Reno Journal-Gazetteer that air shows are constantly looking for ways to mitigate risk. But he and others, including EAA officials, say it's too soon to say what the ultimate effect of last Friday's accident will be. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board says the FAA requirement for retention of documents related to the testing and maintenance of the skins of some Boeing airliners is inadequate to allow it to reach conclusions on the causes of recent ruptures of fuselages. An American Airlines 757 burst open in flight last year due to skin which was determined to be too thin, and a similar but larger tear opened in the roof of a Southwest 737 and was traced back to rivets not installed properly. Bloomberg reports that an FAA rule dating to 1964 requires testing documents to be retained for only 2 years. In April of 2010, that was increased to 10 years, but both the airliners involved in these cases were made more than 10 years ago, under the old standard. Julie O'Donnell, a spokeswoman for Boeing, told Bloomberg the company follows the FAA rules for record retention diligently. The influential Frost & Sullivan consulting firm finds some contradictions among recent market forecasts issued by Airbus, Boeing, and IATA, the International Air Transport Association. Boeing predicts 31,500 new aircraft deliveries through 2030, but Boeing predicts only 28,000. That's a difference of more than 10%. Airbus is, however, bullish on the future for the very large segment of over 400 seats, which just happens to include its own A380 Super Jumbo. Diogenes Papiomaitis, Frost & Sullivan principal consultant, says Western Airlines will buy planes as needed for modernization of their fleets, even though their respective markets will see little growth over the next few years. He contrasts that to AirAsia's Paris Airshow order for 200 A320s, which he calls indicative of an airline clearly geared for growth. The analyst suggests the biggest takeaway from the Airbus forecast is what he calls constrained optimism regarding world economic growth. IATA does not attempt to forecast airliner deliveries, but rather worldwide airline profits, and its predictions beyond 90 days out have been wildly unreliable the past 2 years. The latest forecast, issued this week, revises full-year global airline net profit estimates from $4.0 to $6.9 billion, based on better results from European carriers. Papiomaitis calls the IATA numbers, quote, good indicators of market sentiment, but rather irrelevant from a macro perspective, unquote. He predicts airlines will struggle to break even next year, facing increasing jet fuel prices and fears of a contagious European economic crisis. The Secretary of the Air Force, Michael Donnelly, and Chief of Staff General Norton Schwartz have approved a plan developed by Air Combat Command officials that will allow the F-22 Raptor to resume flight operations after a four-month stand-down. The hiatus followed 12 reported incidents in which pilots experienced hypoxia-like symptoms over 3 years beginning in April of 2008. The return-to-fly plan implements several risk mitigation actions, including rigorous inspections, training on life support systems, and continued data collection. The entire fleet will undergo an extensive inspection of the life support systems before returning to flight, with follow-on daily inspections. The aircraft is capable and authorized to fly above 50,000 feet. Pilots will use additional protective equipment and undergo baseline physiological tests. The return-to-fly process will begin with instructor pilots and flight leads regaining their necessary proficiency, then follow with other F-22 wingmen. Still ahead, a skydiver's death is ruled a suicide. Airline a la carte fees reach an ominous milestone. And the Canadian Air and Space Museum is being evicted. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, September 22nd. I'm Paul Plack. Skydiver Bob Rakey of Duanesburg, New York, had lots of experience with 9,000 log jumps. For some reason, last Sunday, the 60-year-old stepped out of an airplane near Saratoga Skydiving Adventures. But instead of pulling his ripcord, he intentionally unhooked his parachute and died on impact with the ground. The Albany Times-Union reports any question the incident was an accident was removed when investigators found a note in Rakey's car, making it clear he intended to take his own life. Rakey was single with no children and showed no signs of depression or suicidal tendencies. He worked for MMC Millwork in Albany, where owner Sam Greco described him as an excellent employee, with 14 years on the job. The Times-Union notes he was also a skydiving instructor, and even helped an Associated Press reporter make his first accelerated freefall jump in 2006. Oddly, this is the second recent case of suicide by jumping from a plane in this area. In 2008, 29-year-old Sloan Carafalo of Schenectady, New York, jumped from a small plane without a parachute, and died when he struck a home on Duanesburg Road. When they first started popping up a few years ago, the new list of a la carte fees charged by airlines were a nuisance. Now, they're rising to the point at which fees could cost you more than your seat under some circumstances. USA Today notes that some fees for overweight checked bags have now passed the $400 milestone. Among the more significant increases, fees for the first checked bag now start as high as $43. Most airlines now charge a fee when booking so-called free flights earned with your frequent flyer miles. Changing a reservation can cost between $50 and $250, depending on the airline. But the big one is the fee for an overweight checked bag on an international flight. Continental wants $400 for overweight bags on most international routes, and American Airlines charges $450 on flights to Asia. There is one U.S. airline which still has zeros in almost all those a la carte fee columns of the USA Today survey, even for ticket changes, charging only a $10 fee for priority boarding. That's right, it's Southwest Airlines, famous for its Bags Fly Free promotion. The Scaled Composites facility in California's Mojave Desert offered a secluded location to experiment and low rent when Burt Rutan moved in years ago. But the ambiance was decidedly more showbiz on Monday as Scaled and Virgin Galactic celebrated the completion of a new $8 million production facility for their joint venture known as The Spaceship Company. The Associated Press reports that up to 200 people will work in the facility, which will build copies of White Knight 2 and Spaceship 2, the craft which will make suborbital spaceflight available to the masses for the first time. Make that the well-off masses, a ride costs $200,000. Virgin Galactic says 430 people have made deposits, some for the entire amount, despite no firm commitment on when the first passenger flight will be. Virgin Galactic's Richard Branson told hundreds of gathered reporters and dignitaries at the celebration Monday, quote, "Today marks another important step along the road to opening space for everyone. From this hangar, the talented team at the spaceship company will be at the forefront of making space access safe, reliable, and affordable," unquote. And finally today, a down economy, lackluster attendance, rapid management turnover, and a failed fundraising campaign are all being cited as issues in the struggles of the Canadian Air and Space Museum in Toronto's Downsview Park. Sadly, the museum is $100,000 behind on its rent and has now been issued an eviction notice. Downsview Park management says the museum will have to clear the space within 6 months. The location has deep historic significance in Canadian aviation. The hangar, which now houses the museum, was built in 1929 for De Havilland Aircraft of Canada Limited. The land itself is a 672-acre former military base. The Toronto Star reports that on Tuesday afternoon, volunteers emptied the building of artifacts, including a full-scale replica of the legendary Avro Aero fighter jet, and they prepared to vacate the property after 12 years. All that is except museum CEO Robert Cohen, who tells the Star, quote, "I'm distraught. I'm ready to cry. I can't leave this place. I'm camping here. They're going to have to throw me out," unquote. Downsview Park has announced a new tenant for the space, which is far less unique. Another hockey facility, projected to open in September of 2013 with four rinks. Longtime museum volunteer Campbell Young observes, there's a hockey rink so close on the street already that, quote, "you could actually chip a golf ball at it," unquote. That's the latest from Aero News. If you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.